Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
It's time to get inside the Giants' home.
Let's go, let's go, let's go!
On Giants.com.
I like it.
And the Giants mobile app.
Boom, give me some juice!
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's roll!
Welcome to another edition of the Giants Huddle Podcast, brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the New York Football Giants. I am John Schmelk, joined right now by friend of the program. He comes on twice a year, always around this time. When his mock draft comes out, go click on it, find it at The Athletic. And also when his Freaks List comes out in August, he is the one and only Bruce Feldman, who covers college football for The Athletic and for Fox Sports. Bruce, it's good to talk to you again, my friend.
Good to talk to you, John. Great time of year.
Always a great time of year. And you have your mock draft up there and a lot of other fun stories as well, Bruce, that you want people to check out.
Yeah, it's this thing I've been working on for about 6 weeks, and it's a ton of phone calls and conversations, but it's something, you know, covering college football. It's fascinating to hear to get another level of intel and expertise from the coaches, you know, themselves, what they saw, what they came away thinking about these guys, because you hear so much about the players, but these guys are the real experts when it comes to them.
Yeah, and I love talking to people that cover college football, Bruce, because I think you guys have a different perspective, right? You're not covering it just, you know, you're not coming to it a little bit later like I am. You know, other draft guys are with it all year round, but it's just a little bit of a different perspective, and I think it's a perspective that's worth taking into consideration. You know, for example, like Kyle Hamilton a few years ago, you sat here and you told me people think he's unbelievable, he's the best, but then you nitpick his testing, you nitpick this, and I nitpicked a couple of things myself, but in the end, it's who's the best football player, and the people that know that are the guys that are coaching against these guys, right?
Yeah. And they're not always right, but I will say this, the guy who was the most effusive on why he thought CJ Stroud should be the first pick of the draft last year is a college defensive coordinator. And, you know, when he tells me that of all the guys he's seen, that Michael Penix Jr. has by far the best arm talent. And he's, you know, he's played a bunch against Caleb Williams. That carries weight because this guy, you know, like I said, he's played these guys multiple times and he's seen them, he's studied them, he's game planned for them. And then he's seen seen it live and in person in the flow of a game. I think, you know, there's a real credibility with somebody like that.
100%. So let's start with Jaden Daniels. And I thought the consistency in the three or four quotes you had up there about Jaden in your story, Bruce, I thought was pretty telling. And they talked about the progress that he's made since he was younger, how he's improved so much this year, but his timing, accuracy, and touch. And it comes down to me, at least, the art of playing quarterback. And it seems like over his time at LSU and going back, of course, to Arizona State before that, Jaden Daniels has really learned how to play quarterback. And even putting the speed and the running aside, he seems to have earned the respect of these teams going against him because he's really learned how to play the position.
No doubt. He's been a really pleasant surprise. I mean, he was a pretty good player at Arizona State, but it was a program that was in disarray around him, and he wasn't like a high-level passer. And then his first year at LSU in 2022, he really made a big impact. He's a dynamic runner, but he looked like he was a more polished passer. But I think you saw dramatic improvement in him from 2022 to 2023 when he won the Heisman, and how he operated and played the position, his confidence, how he saw the field was significantly different. And I think for a lot of folks who probably looked at, you know, Jaden Daniels is a top five pick, really? They wouldn't have thought that. But after you watched him and saw the growth from him, and yes, he obviously had two high level, you know, first round caliber receivers he was throwing to. And also these guys aren't in the draft, the offensive linemen, but he has some really talented offensive linemen, but he's going up against SEC defenses and he made a lot of people look really silly. And I think that's a credit to him, especially.
And I thought the comments on Drake May were interesting. You write here, the feedback I received was really mixed, reflecting a younger quarterback who has a smaller sample size than the rest of the first round crop. And people forget he's just a redshirt sophomore, right? He's a guy that does not have a ton of experience, but you really seem to have really good reviews on something that I don't think people talk about enough with him is his athleticism, Bruce, his ability to avoid the rush, handle the rush, and make throws under pressure, which behind the not a very good offensive line, he had to do a lot. But at the same time, people saw some inconsistencies with his mechanics and his accuracy.
Yeah, and I think it should be noted. And look, some of these guys, almost all the quarterbacks, in fact, had played for multiple offensive coordinators and changed systems who are in this draft, high-level guys. But he did too. He's one of the ones who didn't transfer. But a year ago, his offensive coordinator, Phil Longo, goes from UNC. He's more of an air raid guy, learned, really studied Mike Leach's system. And then he moves on to Wisconsin and Chip Lindsey comes in. And there were definitely looked like there were some growing pains. Some of his footwork was a little different. I think one of the defensive coordinators I spoke to was pretty blunt. And if, you know, for people who, when they read this story, will see, you know, they felt like he gets very, very uncomfortable. And this defense coordinator said, I thought he looked a little scared back there, and compared him and said, you know, he throws it better than Sam Howell, who was the previous North Carolina quarterback, but felt like Sam Howell had a lot more composure and was more comfortable or with a lot around him than Drake May was. Now, Drake May, again, bigger guy, stronger arm, better arm, but felt like I'm not sure on him. And so he's one, to be honest, after working on this, was probably of all the quarterbacks going in, I felt like it was Michael Penix Jr. is the most polarizing of the quarterbacks in terms of what the coaches think compared to what the draft Twitter thinks. When it comes to the most polarizing from what the coaches think, just purely on that, I actually think Drake May of the quarterbacks was the most polarizing.
That's interesting, and I think it makes sense. So you just mentioned Penix. So, by the way, you had those guys going 1-3 in your mock. You know, I don't know if the landing spots are all that important. You're not trying to be predictive necessarily, but that's where you have them. You have Penix going a little bit later, I believe, and I got to scroll down now. You had him, the Broncos, trading back up for
Raiders. For the Raiders. Yeah. And from my understanding, the Raiders are very intrigued by him from the people I've talked to. He has the best arm talent of this group coming out. He's a guy whose probably athleticism isn't given enough credit. Now, he had a really impressive pro day where, you know, to vertical jump 36 and a half inches for a quarterback, that's pretty spectacular. To, you know, broad jump in the, you know, 10.5 or 10.6, also elite, whether he ran 4.46 or 4.53, that's still moving really well. Obviously, people have had concerns because he had the four season-ending injuries before he got to Washington. Keep in mind, he took over a team in Seattle that was 4-8. Once he got there, largely the same roster, different coaches, but same roster, goes from 4-8 to 25-3 and got him in the national title game. Like, he got my vote to win. You know, I'm a Heisman voter. He was the number one guy on my ballot. I just think he was, you know, there were no empty calories in the stats with him. Yeah, he has really good receivers, but a bunch of these guys have talented receivers. Just what he did, I thought, was pretty remarkable. And, you know, yes, he didn't have a great game against Michigan, but you could go back and nitpick anybody. He played the most high-level games. You look at what he did against Texas, that's about as impressive as anybody was this season.
Yeah, no question. And I think the one knock or nitpick, for however you want to phrase it, was that people wondered how he handles pressure, and he does get the ball out quickly. His, like, you know, sack to pressure ratio and sack to pass attempt ratio is actually really good. But I think the kind of throwing on the move and resetting your feet and kind of making those throws off platform was the only thing that I think one of your coaches' quotes had, where they had maybe a little bit of a concern when he gets to the league and he doesn't have, you know, one of the better offensive lines in football like he had in Washington, and things are a little bit dirtier at the NFL level.
Yeah, definitely could be. I think you have a big sample size with this guy, right? He played 15 games last year, and he's played, you know, he had injury shortened seasons, but he's played a lot of football. And I think one of the things to me that bodes really well for him is a lot of the guys who are first round quarterbacks, and the bust rate is very high. You know, it's plus 50% of the guys who don't live up to be franchise quarterbacks. And it's all sorts of reasons, but talking to Daniel Jeremiah, you know, the NFL Network's draft analyst, one of the things that came up was the biggest issue, according to Daniel, and I buy this, is when these guys get hit with actual adversity, it knocks them off course and they don't respond to it. In the case of Michael Penix Jr., knowing him pretty well and having covered, like, I mean, the difference when you cover college football as opposed to coming from the NFL side, some of these guys you're really, you know, versed in. And in the case of Penix, having been around him a bunch from not just from Washington, but all the way back to Indiana, knowing how candid he was about the adversity he dealt with in a way that a lot of times maybe players, especially at that position, aren't acknowledging stuff. They may just be reeling to face it, to overcome it, and then to battle past it. I think he checks those boxes in a big way that a lot of these other guys, it's a TBD on them.
Yeah, and so does Bo Nix, right? He's another guy that dealt with a lot of adversity, and that was the team, the player the Broncos traded back into your first round of 27 to draft Bo Nix. And two very different players if you watch him in Auburn and Oregon. And it's funny, like, you go back to the Auburn tape and, you know, you feel like the arm strength's there, then you don't see it as much as Oregon. Was that just a matter of the system, Bruce? And what was your overall take from the people that you talked to about Bo Nix?
Good game manager. I mean, he's a good athlete. He can extend plays. I think there is a little bit of skepticism about how good his arm is. I think, you know, whether it's slightly above average or not, you know, again, comparing it, it's not Penix's arm. It's not probably Caleb's arm. It's not Drake May's arm. So, you know, I think that's the part that's interesting. You know, I think if you had asked people, because he was terrific at Oregon, right? And I think he fit that system very well. You know, I like Bo Nix in terms of, I think there's, you know, you transitioned on this well, going from Penix to him, about some of his moxie and some of his resilience. And I think emotional intelligence, I think some of those things are pretty favorable for Bo Nix. And, you know, he's battled through stuff. He did some good things at Auburn. He played early. They leaned on him heavy, dealt with, you know, a lot of uncertainty around him. There are plays, you go back and watch, I think it's 2021. He plays at Tiger Stadium against LSU, and he makes some spectacular plays to extend on third downs against, again, high level athletes. This is the SEC. This isn't like he was, you know, in the MAC or some other place where maybe there's a handful of big time athletes. I mean, you know, I'm not saying guaranteeing he's going to be a NFL all pro quarterback, but I think there's a lot there to be intrigued by. And I wouldn't, you know, in the right system, I think he can be a very good NFL quarterback.
All right, the final quarterback, and then we'll get to some of the other fun positions here. J.J. McCarthy, you had the Vikings trading up to 4 to draft him. Not a surprise. You talk about his leadership, his intellect. The thing that I like, though, is that what college coaches seem to indicate to you is that he really understands coverages, right? And he would get off the field and he'd be able to repeat exactly what the coverage is and why he did what he did. Is that why you think, as he meets with GMs and coaches, you know, he's quote-unquote, I hate the phrase, rising on draft boards? Because once he gets in front of these guys and they get a feel for that intellect, that it just enhances what they see on tape?
It does. And I also think with him, there is a charisma, a leadership quality about him that pops. You know, we did a lot of games of Michigan, and JJ has a little bit of an aura to him that I think is resonating with probably people who meet with him. There is something there. You know, you talk to coaches, you know, who played him, they felt like he was the unquestioned leader of a team that, by the way, went, you know, 27-1 with him. And he's a really good athlete. I don't know if people who hadn't, you know, if there are people who are new to it, I don't think they realize how good of an athlete JJ McCarthy really is. You see it in snippets on 3rd and 8 when he has to, you know, like, they ran him and they let him, like, use his wheels when they really needed it. And they won a national title in large part because he did some super athletic things that it shows up. It, you know, there may not be, you know, hours of it on film, but right, whenever they really needed something, I think JJ broke the glass and JJ did it. And that's the part where I'm like, oh yeah, I think I could see JJ again. A lot of it comes back to, you know, what kind of system does he go into and everything. You know, I mean, to take two steps back, you know, I thought Sam Darnold would have been a better NFL quarterback than he's been.
Me too.
You know, Yeah, I'm not saying he's like was can't miss because he wasn't, but I thought there was a lot of stuff in terms of his athleticism, in terms of his toughness, in terms of his ability to make plays when they fall apart. But obviously his confidence with the Jets, you know, was reeling. And I felt like he's never, you know, hasn't been able to get on track at that point with JJ. And again, I don't want to say he's like Sam Darnold because I think they're different, but in terms of like his ability to make a play when he needs it and everything, I do think he's a guy that I would bet on, as you know, if he goes into a good situation, that he could really flourish. Because in Jim Harbaugh's system, unlike most of the systems that college quarterbacks come out of, which are more spread style now, he's had to learn all the footwork for it. And very few quarterbacks have that down the way he had it down in college. And I think that bodes well for him to adjust to whatever you're going to see with him.
You love turf. You're good at it. So you start a turf biz. Business grows, your savings grow. Become the most celebrated name in turf. Are you ready for all that life brings?
You mentioned his third and long tape is excellent. He makes plays when he has to. And a couple throws, stepping up in the pocket while going full speed. Just some, you're right. And for the, they don't ask him to do it a ton, but when they do, he's able to. So I think he's a really interesting evaluation. All right, let's hit a couple different positions. Bruce, real quick, Giants Huddle is brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the Giants. From game day to every day, Citizens is made ready for Giant fans with insights, guidance, and solutions. Learn more at citizensbank.com. Marvin Harrison Jr., he's awesome. Everyone you talked to said he's awesome. Here's the nugget I want to ask you about. Jeremiah Smith, a true freshman enrollee. People think he's going to be better. What?
Yeah, it's so this is a guy from South Florida where there's more, that area has produced more top-level receivers than any part of the country. And there's a guy named Larry Bluestein who is like the godfather of South Florida recruiting. He knows more about South Florida youth football and high school football than anybody probably on the planet. Said he's the, you know, the best one he's ever seen. He's got down, he got to Columbus already. Now he's a 218 pound kid. He's already bigger than Marvin Harrison Jr. And he's an early enrollee freshman. So his high school class is still hasn't graduated yet. I know from the people I trust in Columbus, they are raving about what they've already seen from him in terms of his competitiveness, his toughness, his mental makeup, his athleticism, and his ball skills. So again, not to diminish Marvin Harrison Jr., who's the most complete receiver the Buckeyes have had in this run, but just make a note of Jeremiah Smith. That guy is going to blow people away. I don't want to say he's going to be the first pick in the draft receiver, but keep an eye on him for the next 3 years.
Was there one nitpick or negative that came up when talking to people about Marvin Harrison Jr., or no, not really?
No, it's not a negative. The only question that I got, and this is a lot of, you know, conversations, but was one of the coaches in the conference said, how come he, like, it was like kind of pushing back at me. He was like, how come he didn't run at the combine? How come he didn't run at pro day? And he was like, I think he's a great player. My guess is he's closer to 4.5 than closer to 4.35. And, you know, there was talk and he was high up on my freaks list and he, you know, he's a 23 mile per hour guy. And usually guys who are 23 mile per hour, you know, burst are not, you know, 4.5 twos at the, you know, usually they're 4.42 or faster. Again, your word nitpicky, that is, I'll live with that one. So he's really polished. People love his character. People, you know, really good ball skills, really good size, really smart kid. He is as close to can't miss as you're going to get. There's two guys in the draft to me that are as close to can't miss. He's the first one. And then the second one also plays that position. And that's Roma Dunze.
Yes. And this is the quote. I wrote it down reading your story the other day, Bruce. And the feedback you got from Adunze is can't miss. And the quote I loved is that he's so focused, he's able to count the rotations on the football on passes thrown to him, which to me is insanity. But boy, there is a lot of love out there from coaches, which just does not surprise me considering how complete and, you know, I think polished a prospect he is for Roma Dunze.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never had a quote like that, you know, and the things that jump for you, you know, out are just his ability to track a ball, his ability to make contested catches. He runs really well. You know, he's a, you know, guy in the mid 4.4s. he's strong. And the competitiveness, the stuff I've heard from people who've worked with him is just glowing about, you know, he would be the most competitive guy who showed up in Indy at the combine in terms of like what they think of him. So, you know, love Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, I had the Giants getting Odunze. I'm trying to think, you know, obviously Odell Beckham Jr. was, you know, with the Giants, and I, you know, growing up in New York State, like I remember when Brian Kelly was not the Brian Kelly, the coach, it was the linebacker. So I have a long time of New York Giants. I'm like, man, Rome Odunze would be a spectacular addition. The question is, can they get him the ball enough, you know? So.
Yeah, and then the other guy they could select is Malik Nabers, and people just went off about his explosiveness. I'm curious what you heard about him, Tony. I'm sorry, Bruce. We just recorded with Tony Pauline, my co-host on Draft.
I'll take that as a compliment. That's yeah. Okay.
One thing in your quotes about Nabers, he's a dog. Now, I've heard some people say, all right, maybe there's a little bit of a diva in him. But then I talked to other people close to the program with like, nah, he was a 3-star. He's a blue collar guy. That's not who he is. What have you heard about what Nabers is as a guy and a player off the field? Because we know, you know, you give him the ball, you can take it 80 yards on any play.
Yeah, very, very competitive, electric player. Great with the ball in his hands. He's not small. He's 6'1", 200 pounds. I wonder if some of that chatter, and you just, you know, sometimes this time of year, you kind of like take it with a grain of salt. I wonder if some of those folks have him confused with it. Like LSU in the post Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase run had a batch of really promising athletic receivers, which two of them are in this class, which will be first round guys. One's Nabers, the other one's Brian Thomas Jr. There was another guy in there who had a breakout career start to his career and then kind of fizzled. And I wonder if some of this chatter is
Keyshawn Boutte you're talking about. Yeah.
I wonder if some of that are people confusing the two? Is some of that like, I don't know at this point. Cause you wonder when people say stuff like that and some of that stuff gets out. There have been times where, and I can think of a specific example I don't want to go into, but like where it was a player and it was like what got reported was they meant one like position. They meant the right guard, not the left guard, you know, who got identified at, you know, and it's just like, and then it takes on a life of its own. Again, I don't, you know, I don't know. I will say this. And some of this is going to Indy, like Brian Thomas Jr., who put up huge numbers and is a, you know, I think is the fourth guy of this group. One of the people there said, you know, this guy is way more football smart than I think a lot of people realized. And you start to wonder, like, what is the perceptions about guys that like kind of takes on a life of its own when that kind of thing comes up? But, you know, it's people are speculating and they're trying to figure out, especially when it's a player. This isn't really Nabers because Nabers was really productive even before this. But like when it's almost like they really break through and everybody starts buzzing about him in a year. So I don't know if that's where that came from. That's my guess.
Yeah, you mentioned Brian Thomas Jr. So let's slide down. And, you know, you had a couple different quotes on him and both basically said 50-50 guy, good deep ball, really good athlete, but maybe he still needs to polish things up a little bit. He's a little bit raw, correct?
Yeah. But I think everybody who's been around him really likes what they've seen. They just was like, he was the red zone guy who scared everybody to death. Whereas Nabers, they did a little more with. It sounds like Thomas, I think is closer to being like a complete receiver from things I've heard getting up to the draft than maybe some other people think he is. For instance, so I had another freaks list guy in the draft last year, Quentin Johnson from TCU. And for, you know, there's similar size. I think Brian Thomas Jr. has more speed. Quentin was surprisingly shifty and elusive at that size, but his hands were more inconsistent or are more inconsistent. I think Charger fans kind of probably are just, you know, wincing about some of that. To me, Thomas is a much more polished player, and I think is a better prospect, to be honest. I mean, he's faster, he's around the same size, his hands I think are better. you know, run after the catch, I'm not sure that's where Quentin, I think, really excelled. But you have to catch the ball to do run after the catch, too.
No, absolutely. I want to touch on the last two top 10 guys, Bruce, and then we'll kind of roll through the back half pretty quick here. He's like talking to people about Brock Bowers. It's like, can I find somebody to say something bad about this guy? I don't know if I can. Everyone seems to love him to death. And Joe Alt, I think it was one of your smallest captions. Just one quote. It was the best lineman we played all year. Is Joe Alt just like good, like boring good? He's just like so good he's boring.
he's to me head and shoulders. I know that there's been some other guys who've been lumped in closer to him from everything I've heard. And again, some of the coaches I've talked to have played a couple of, you know, they played Graham Barton too. Right. And to the comments, and it's not a knock on Graham Barton, or it shouldn't be, is like, oh, people are talking about him in that category. And they're kind of surprised because they just see the difference right now. And granted, one of them is a guy who people think could possibly play all five positions, whereas Alt is outside. But I couldn't get anybody to say anything bad about Alt. I mean, not that I was really trying to goad it, but like people just were that impressed with him. And as far as Bowers, one of the guys, and it didn't make the story because it was one of the last people I talked to, and it was like the story was already kind of going to print, said, I think Brock Bowers is arguably the greatest tight end in college football that I've seen in like 25 years. Wow. Just he took over games. And he's not 6'6", you know, I mean, but he is so dynamic with the ball in his hands and has really good ball skills, and it has a competitiveness. And, the one that made the story was about the clutch gene. He's the best offensive, like Kirby Smart has cranked out first round talent. He's the best offensive player Kirby Smart's had since he's been the coach at Georgia for like a decade.
And look, when you can start as a freshman, true freshman at Georgia, I think that kind of tells you all you need to know, right? It's just, you know, he's been a great, great player. Giant fans love a winner. It's why they love Citizens. They made 2022 Best Bank in the U.S. by The Banker as the official bank of the Giants and sponsor of The Huddle. Citizens is made ready for fans of Big Blue. Learn more at citizensbank.com. Not a surprise, Bruce, you have a ton of offensive linemen in your mock draft because there are a ton of good ones in your mock draft. When you get to that second group, your Lathams, your Fuangas, your Mims, your Fautanus, all those guys, is this kind of just like a chef's choice deal? Because looking through all their reports, everyone seems to have Tyler Guyton too, have to say really good things about all these players.
Yeah, chef's choice is interesting. Like, I think, you know, you go to get, you know, the Mahler from Oregon State might be a little bit of a cut above some of those other guys to play off the verbiage. But you mentioned Tyler Guyton. So Tyler Guyton is a late bloomer. I don't want to say he is, you know, Lane Johnson, like kind of that kind of path, but he did go through Oklahoma and switch positions. And, you know, Bill Biedenboe, the offensive line coach, one of the best offensive line coaches in college football, has had a lot of really good NFL players. This is probably the most gifted, physically athletic lineman he's had. How close is he? You got Mims from Georgia, who is just a giant of a man who's very athletic, but he's only started 7 games in college. So, you know, so what are you getting there in terms of what are you getting? Like, how close is he? And then you start getting into like the guys inside, like two guys that people really rave to me about. I just don't know how high centers go, you know, Jackson Power Johnson from Oregon, who's super strong and did well at the Senior Bowl. And then Zach Frazier from West Virginia was another guy who had like some kind of Paul Bunyan kind of quotes from some of the coaches who played him. And I'm like, okay, can I work this into the mock draft? He's like, people love him, but you know, where to center, you know, how many centers are going in the first round?
No, it's tough. And then, you know, Graham Barton's a guy, too, you mentioned earlier. It's funny. You talk about trying to get guys into the story. Well, for the teams that didn't have first-round picks, you included some second-round picks in here, too. And I'm like, I feel like you're sitting there. I have so many wide receivers that are good that I have quotes on. I need to fit these guys in somewhere. So let's just kind of go through the rest of the wide receivers you mentioned real quick here. A.D. Mitchell, you did have in your first round. But I think the interesting thing with him, Bruce, and he basically said this out loud at the combine, which usually guys will do this, but they'll never say it out loud, where he basically said, yeah, if I knew the ball wasn't coming to me, I didn't really run that hard. And that's what the coaches said.
Yeah, that shows up. Like, here's the thing with him, John. So Our crew did a Texas K-State game, and it was a game where Quinn Ewers, the starting quarterback, wasn't going to play. So the backup, Malik Murphy, who's now at Duke, was going to be the starter. And I'm watching, and I know some K-State coaches, so we're just kind of like watching, you know, them warm up. And it's the first time I had seen him in person, since his Georgia days, at least. I'm like, wow, you're looking at him, you're like, man, he looks like a first-round player. You watch how he moves, everything. And he went off in the game. You know, he like kind of could dominate. But then there is moments, and like, Brian Thomas has, you know, great red zone threat, you know, size speed guy, and that's what he is. But there are times where it's like, can the quarterback trust him if the routes, you know, are not run, you know, if it's like what you just said? So can an NFL team get that out of him? Like if the Bills take him, where I had him going, and I started working on this like before the Diggs trade happened, but they already lost Gabe Davis. But like they could really need a number one guy. He has number one guy talent. It's just, like, I don't say you got to get it out of him. Like he's some kind of like, you know, problem child, but I just think it's just maturity and focus and we'll see where he gets to.
Yeah. And then two other guys, you would go in the second round then with those second round picks, Malachi Corley, who I stood next to him, Bruce, at the Senior Bowl. And I interviewed him for about 6 minutes. Engaging kid, really good kid. But as someone that's been in the same locker room as Saquon Barkley for the last 7 years, he's built like Saquon Barkley. Yeah. Like, this dude's not built like a wide. He's a tank. But I think one of the interesting quotes he had is that they think he's more than just that screen pass, you know, end the round, jet sweep, gadget guy. And I think he kind of showed that at the Senior Bowl a little bit too. So what's your feel from people around the league that you talk to in college football? Can he be more than just that guy that gets balls at the line of scrimmage?
One of the guys I talked to about Corley is, you know, one of those guys where I'm like, okay, I've had a track record with this guy. He's coached in the SEC. He's like, he's one of the people whose opinion I trust most. And he was really glowing about Corley. And so I would put probably more stock in that than I would in a lot of other things I get, just because I know what this guy sees and his perspective on things. Again, it's like, you know, does he go to a place that has a really good quarterback and a really good system? We'll see. But I mean, he's a dazzling player, run after the catch. I'm glad you saw him up close, because he does not look like any other receiver. You know, like there are receivers who are impressive, but he looks like, you know, I mean, it's funny you say Saquon, because Saquon does not look like any receiver. You know, he's just a muscled up, you know, like blocky, you know, imposing guy, but you usually don't see that with receivers, no. You know, not to that degree. So I'm interested to see where he goes and what they do with him. Cause he was a dominant player in that league, and that league's pretty good football. And everybody knew he was a mark man, and they were going to try to get him the ball however they could get him the ball, and whatever they did. And they still really couldn't slow him down much.
McConkie was the other wide receiver you managed to slip in there. And he's a guy that I'm not surprised that coaches really appreciate what he can do. He just seems like such a polished receiver when you watch him with his route running. But one of the coaches did say they think he might be a slot only guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's not the biggest receiver, but he is really fast. He's also really quick, and he is really polished. You know, he wasn't like he was a go-to guy for them. I would have been curious at Georgia, you know, again, whereas a little like Michigan, where they're going to win their football games, pounding you on both sides of the ball. They're not airing it out. And he had a really good quarterback this year, who's not in the draft, but I think, you know, if they don't have Bowers, and Bowers was banged up a little bit this year, but if they don't have Bowers, is he more of a, is he putting up bigger numbers? Because then he's a little more of an X factor guy. And, you know, fortunately for Georgia, they did have Bowers. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he was more productive, much more productive, or a factor in offenses in the NFL game than he was at Georgia. Now, if he went some other system, and I'm not saying he should have transferred, but if he went to, you know, you could name the school, you know, if he went to USC and he had Caleb throwing to him, or if he went to Oregon where, you know, that system, you know, he probably puts up like double the yardage numbers, but, you know, obviously everybody, you know, and, you know, they kind of pick schools for a reason. It's not always to be like, hey, I'm going to try to get stats. I mean, he won a ton of football games there and was developed.
No, absolutely. I'm with you.
You're ready for a change. Payday comes early with Citizens. So go to that retreat. New you moves to the country. Now you're raising goats and launching a lifestyle brand. Are you ready for all that life brings?
All right, two other players that I feel like the league's all over the place on, depending on who you talk to, and I'm one. It seems like the college coaches maybe too. Olufashinu from Penn State. I feel like even the evaluation of what he's good at and what he's bad at, Bruce, was different from quote to quote in that little blurb that you had.
It was. I mean, he's a big, imposing guy who's really bright. He's athletic. I think, you know, some guys thought he was he needs still more polish. Like, you know, I talked to some of the Penn State guys who were like, he stoned our speed rushers every day at practice. And those are, when I say speed rushers, I mean, Chop Robinson, you don't get faster and more explosive than him. And there was other guys who are undersized edge rushers they had who were really good players, you know, Adisa Isaac, who, you know, giant, even was, grew up in that, you know, that footprint up there. Those are really good players. And I think that bodes well for him. I think it was a consistency thing. Now against Ohio State, that was the film this year, or this past year, that I think gave some people pause about him. He struggled. He struggled against a really, really high level edge rusher in JT Tuimoloau, who will be in the draft next year.
Who's and would really have been a first round pick this year if he came out, by the way.
Yes. Really strong, really athletic. And he got after him pretty good. And so I think that maybe was sitting in some people's heads, but you know, I think he's one of the better offensive tackles in the first round crop.
And then Nate Wiggins is the other guy, right? And one of the scouts that, or one of the coaches that you had quotes from said what I've been saying about the kid. Like, he's so fast and he's so athletic and twitchy, you can cover anybody. But then he's like, but, you know, I'm not sure how physical he is, and I'm not sure you want him tackling it. Well, you know, whatever, 180 pounds, whatever his true playing weight was. So
fiery guy.
Yeah, it just seems like you're going to have a trade-off here, right? If you draft him, you're going to really need him in coverage, but I don't know how much you can count on him in the run game, you know, outside.
Yeah, he would be one of the ones who I think was, you know, who people were higher on than I expected them to be, to the degree, you know, like he was kind of, I don't want to say a drive-by, but one of the coaches was like, you know who I thought was awesome? The cornerback at Clemson. Mm. And then it got down to that, because it was somebody who, you know, was in the league and just kind of raved about, you saw him in a lot of crossover tape and just kept on noticing him. It was like, man, that guy is pretty special. And so, you know, I didn't want to disregard it. And again, it's interesting because the guy of the DBs who, you know, I just hear glowing stuff about is Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, you know, checks every box and is great, you know, ball skills and is like a strong, explosive athlete and everything. But then you get the Alabama guys who people like, but I don't know if they love them, you know, for a couple of different reasons. And then you have this other kid who's got good length and exceptional speed, but I think there's a little bit like, okay, you know, is he the most physical guy? We know he's pretty competitive. Usually those things come hand in hand, but sometimes they don't always go like that.
You mentioned the two Alabama corners real quick, then just two ones, and we'll wrap this, Bruce. You've been so generous with your time. Awesome stuff as always. Yeah. Fans have great feedback on whenever we have you on, by the way. They absolutely love it. You said some people maybe not as high on the two Alabama corners. What are some of the things on Arnold and McKinstry that you're hearing that teams or coaches maybe have some questions about?
So Terrion Arnold really kept getting better and better over the last 3 years. And I think people like that. They think he can play all three, you know, can play slot, can be a shutdown corner, and can play safety. I don't know if he's, I think they see him as the better athlete of the two. When it comes to Kool-Aid came in with a lot, you know, a lot of hype and played well early, and it's not an easy system to pick up for a DB. I think the athleticism was a little bit of the, I don't say it's not a red flag. It's just like, I think they probably, like, he is not Quinyon Mitchell athletically, but very few guys are. I think there was, you know, some of the people said it felt like he will take some chances and maybe watch, you know, Diggs came from Alabama and makes a lot of big plays, but occasionally will give up some big plays. And I think they, you know, the if you look at, you know, the Texas guys kind of got the best of the Alabama guys in that matchup earlier in the season. Texas guys are really talented receivers with a lot of speed. So, again, I think both guys are first round guys. I just don't know if they're, you know, from everything I've heard, it felt like Quinyon Mitchell was a little more of a sure thing than both guys at Alabama.
Who are a couple guys that you had to leave on the cutting room floor here where you had some great quotes and you wanted to get him in here, but you just ran out of spots in your mock?
Peyton Wilson from NC State is arguably the best defensive player in the country this past year. He is big. He is really physical. He ran in the low 4.4s. He's smart. He's tough. Peyton Wilson has a very, you know, suspect medical evaluation. Now he had knee and shoulder. He's been healthy for the last 2 years. But the question is also, he plays a position now that's a little like running back, where it's just, you know, if Peyton Wilson came along 10 years ago, if he didn't have the medical history, Peyton Wilson might be the fifth pick in the draft or something. Like, he's that athletic and that productive. But I think somebody will take him within the, you know, top 75 picks, because somebody will look at it and go, heck, as long as he can get through the first contract, he can help us win a lot of football games, assuming it's the right fit, system fit in terms of linebackers, because it's not a great group right now. I mean, you have Edgerrin Cooper, who is a run and hit guy from Texas A&M, who put up big numbers, and he, in the old style way of linebackers, he's probably a top 15 pick, but now people don't take linebackers that way. And so those are guys that I'm very fascinated to see how soon they go and where they go to.
All right. Final question, unrelated to the mock draft. Who are some players in college football, knowing the country as well as you do, that you think are going to break out this year that maybe people don't quite know enough about yet?
You're catching me in the middle of my NFL mindset.
Sorry about that.
There's a handful of guys I'm very curious to see what, you know, we obviously talked about Jeremiah Smith from Ohio State. I think he is going to explode onto the national scene. In terms of, like, you know, Ohio State, also, we talked about the Alabama DBs. Caleb Downs is the best player in the secondary. He was a true freshman safety last year. He ended up transferring to Columbus. He's going to play at Ohio State. To play that position in Nick Saban's defense as well as he did, he's a phenomenal player. I think he is really, really special. He's another one, you know, to definitely keep an eye on. I think Malachi Starks, people know about him. He had a terrific start to his career at Georgia. Is a big, big time player. And then Pierce, the edge rusher at Tennessee, he's almost, from what I heard, he's like over 265 pounds. He runs in sub 4.5. He's arguably the most talented guy in the SEC right now. And I think he's a spectacular talent, and, you know, can't wait to see what he does this year. I mean, he's had a huge, you know, first year as a coming out party. I think he's a guy who's just going to get better and better.
Yeah, and of course, we'll have a much longer list when Bruce gets his freaks list compiled for 2024 in August. We'll have Bruce on when he does that. Obviously, you can find him on Twitter at Bruce Feldman CFB. You can find the link to his mock draft there when we post this. I'll put the link in my tweet as well.
Let me tell you one other guy I had to think about, because I'm knowing my audience here. So yes. AJ Cornelius is, I don't say he's grew up in your backyard, but pretty much did. You know, he's a New York kid, started his career at Rhode Island. A bunch of big schools saw him as a really good player. He was playing for Stephon Wheeler, who is a, you know, former NFL lineman at URI. And then he ended up at Oregon, and he had a really good first year at Oregon. I don't know, you know, I haven't studied him enough and I haven't talked to enough people to say, oh, he's going to project as a top 15 offensive tackle. He's a really good football player as they transition into the Big Ten this year. Again, for Giants fans and people in that area, here's a homegrown kid who's really smart, who's, you know, is a really likable kid who transitioned up from Rhode Island all the way on the other side of the country into Oregon. And he played really, really well. And I think he's on a lot of people's radar, or should be.
I like it. So again, you can find the link to the mock draft on Bruce's Twitter page. And Bruce, any other stories you have out there or coming out that you want people to know about that you want them to check out?
Yeah, again, I don't want to keep playing my tri-state New York hat here, but I did a story around the combine that I worked on about Peter Schrager, who is a New Jersey native who has now become a big star for NFL Network and also works at Fox. And what I really wanted to get into was like, okay, and John, I've seen you in Indy at the combine, and it's just like, it's a great networking place. And for people who've never been there, people are curious how like the sausage gets made. What I always wanted to do a story about the, like what kind of networking and how the whole combine works. And Schrager was kind of the perfect person to see it through his lens, because, you know, he told me when he graduated at Emory, he was working doing PR for a Beth Israel hospital in New York and freelance writing on the side, and was able to network and hustle and build up, you know, this great Rolodex and develop these relationships. So if people want to see really how somebody gets connected and kind of the, what I would call the art of schmoozing and how it can pay off, read the story. It went up online, I think, yesterday on The Athletic, and I think it's a fun read.
Absolutely. Bruce, you're the best. Thank you so much for the time. Enjoy what I guess we call the off season now, though, as you well know, there's really no off season in any football related sport anymore, but enjoy it. Thanks so much for the time and enjoy the draft, my friend.
Always a pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.
Bruce Feldman, The Athletic, Fox Sports, covering college football. Thanks for joining us on the Giants Huddle podcast, brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the Giants. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it. Tenor girl goes shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait.
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.